My name is Ariel. I moved to the US at 19. I spoke no English and I struggled finding job opportunities. Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Hey, it's Zuko and Kayla from The Wake Up Call. Enjoy your podcast, but when you're done, don't forget about us. We have a radio show. We try to bring a smile to your face every morning.
We also talk to some of the hottest country stars of today, and we like to share some good news with That's What I Like.
Because Lord knows that's hard to find. When you're done podcasting your podcast, listen to us at 92.3 WCOL.
Set your preset on your radio right now, and don't forget you can listen to us online on the iHeartRadio app.
Anytime you're telling a story that starts with, well, everybody knows that, you know, you can't just go to bed with dirty counters. Well, yes, you can. It turns out you can go to bed with dirty counters, and people do it all the time. I mean, nobody wants to eat off truly filthy counters, but I'm guessing those counters will get dirty again
encrusted.
The next day.
Perhaps that's where we draw the line.
That's maybe where we draw the line, but the counters will, in fact, get dirty again the next day, whereas you won't get that time back.
Hey there, welcome to U-Turns, a podcast where we talk about changing direction, turning around, being different. I am Lisa Oz.
And I'm Jill Herzig. And as we talk about transformation, I feel like the topic comes up often. How do we manage our time? How do we manage our time when we're trying to navigate some sort of complicated, weird snaggle in our lives? So what kind of a time manager?
You are a massive time manager. I feel like this podcast, you can just take off your earphones and leave the room because you are so good with time.
I'm not, and I'm worse. There was a time when I worked a big job and I had an assistant. And, you know, I say that she moved me around on the game board of my life. That is what I would always feel. I had a series of fantastic assistants for whom I will be eternally grateful. Without them, though, I'm my own assistant. I yell at my inner assistant all the time because she messes up all the time. And no, I don't. I feel like my time management is not my great strength.
Well, you fake it really well because from the outside, it looks like you're doing perfectly with time management. I, on the other hand, really need to talk to our guest today because she is time maven. She is the host of two podcasts. She's really, we can barely struggle with this one.
I know.
Before Breakfast and Best of Both Worlds. She's also an author. She's got a bunch of books. Her most recent is Juliet's School of Possibilities. We are joined today by the beautiful Laura Vanderkam. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And I need your help so badly. Because I am a master procrastinator. And this podcast is about change and transformation, but I think so many of us, myself included, feel like we just can't fit it into what we're doing. Our lives are so crammed with stupid, busy stuff that we can never actually do anything different. Can you fix us?
Well, I think you both seem very functional. We're all here, so we solved that problem at least. The difficulty with time is that it keeps passing whether you think about how you're spending it or not. And so it's very easy to spend time mindlessly and consciously sort of taking ourselves out of this flowing river to ask, well, where is my time going? Is it going to the right places? Am I happy about this? Am I not happy about this? It takes a lot of effort. And of course, when you're so busy, it's hard to put effort into things.
And also, when you're going through change, your focus is not at its best anyway, you know? So I think there is a time management blow-up that happens when you're going through any kind of life transition. Except, as Lisa says, that's a moment when it's really critical to be able to take stock. Give us a method. What's the starting place for managing our time better?
Well, I think for anyone, and certainly for people in transition, it really helps to figure out where the time is actually going. Because especially when there is a lot of change, we have a tendency to tell ourselves all sorts of stories about where the time might be going. And maybe they're true, but maybe they're not. So we want to make sure. Because if you're trying to make changes, you need to know where you are now. Otherwise, how do you know if you're changing the right thing? Maybe something that you thought was a problem really isn't. Maybe something you've never even considered, taking far more time than you might have imagined. So I always recommend as the first step, try tracking your time. Ideally for a week. A couple days is okay. A week is best because that's the actual cycle of life as we live it. And it doesn't have to be.
How granular do you have to get?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not saying get up, you know, every time you get up to get a glass of water, you have to write that down. That would be impossible to stick with. I track my time in these half-hour blocks. And I find that a half hour is enough to give me a good picture of where the time is going, but isn't so detailed that I get overwhelmed. And I'm not writing down every half hour in the sense of checking in every half hour. I probably check in about 3 times a day and write what I did since the last time. And I know this doesn't sound like a tremendous amount of fun. Writing where the time goes is about as much fun as tracking your spending or tracking your eating or the other things that people suggest. But it is so useful. And one of the key reasons to do it is we often see that things are going better than we think they are. You know, we have a tendency to invent all sorts of catastrophes about how behind we are, how we're dropping, you know, balls left and right. And that may not be the case. It may be that you are spending quite a bit of time with the people who are important to you. It may be that you are, you know, not sleeping well every night, but some nights are doing better than others. It may be that you do have some pockets of high-quality leisure time, maybe not as much as you want, but it might be some. And so when we see that, it often gives us permission to relax a little bit. And when you're in that more relaxed sense of abundance, then you can start making the changes that you do need to make.
So let's pretend that I've kept this journal.
And let's pretend.
Let's pretend. And maybe I'm not as productive as I would like to be. And I see like, oh, you spent half an hour making toast and drinking tea. You have 7 secrets to time management that will help us. No, you don't?
I'm sure I do. I'm trying to think which 7.
You have a bunch of secrets.
I have a bunch of secrets.
We don't
okay,
have
7.
To...
All right, I will come up,
okay.
come
right.
up with 7.
The secrets that I learned from you,
yes.
which I have not yet applied, but the first one was tend your garden, then you had make life memorable. Secrets?
These are chapter titles for,
yes.
from a book
yes.
that came out about a year ago. Yes, now,
yes.
Now you've helped me remember.
Okay. Do you want to share those with us?
Sure. Well, okay. I mean, the tending your garden metaphor is what we were just talking about figuring out where the time goes and then asking yourself the questions of what you like and what you don't like. Similar if you were, you know, tending a garden, you're weeding, you're pruning, you're saying, do I like that there? Do I want something else there? And, you know, over time, you can build quite a beautiful thing as long as you recognize that there is work involved in it. You know, a garden is not a set it and forget it sort of thing. And the same thing with a schedule. But if you put yourself in the position of being that master gardener, you can make all sorts of wonderful things happen with your life. And I think that sense of autonomy and control is the most important thing to come out of tracking your time. Because you start to see that I do have some power to make decisions. Maybe there are things that feel like they are not so much choices. These are obligations I have or things that I have to deal with in my life. But there's probably some space within the garden of a schedule that we can exercise some autonomy over. And as we figure out how we can make the best choices with that over time, we can start to expand that sphere of influence.
Okay, so another one that you talk about is don't fill time. I feel like... anytime I see a little chunk open, I think, how should I best fill this?
Yeah, we all have a tendency to do that. And I think it's, many of us have this unquestioned story in our heads that the busier you are, the more important you are. And on some level, it makes sense, right? Because when somebody is important, there's a lot of demand for their time, right? That's why they're important. You know, there, lots of people want to see them and so forth. But it doesn't actually logically follow that these people pack every minute of their schedule. Many of the most successful people I've ever studied have used the power they do have over their time to leave open blocks of space. And there's a couple reasons for this. I mean, one is everything takes longer than you think it will. I mean, there's traffic on the way into work. Imagine that. You know, it takes longer to get somewhere in the rain. Who would have thought?
Right.
A meeting ran over. Oh, my goodness. Never happened before. All these things, right, are entirely anticipatable. And so because of that, it helps to leave open space. But it's not just about those practicalities. It's about recognizing that open space invites opportunity into our lives. If you're having a really good conversation with someone and it's leading to all sorts of interesting revelations and things you might want to try in the future and ideas, it is so awesome to be able to stick with that conversation, not be like, yeah, I got another meeting, you know, 2:30 next and then 3 o'clock next and so forth like that. So the only way you can do that is to not fill time.
Yeah. Book enough of it. Leave bumpers on the sides of meetings. I've noticed that our new scheduling software at my other job, I got a lot of hustles here, you know, has an option to, when you book an hour, it actually only books 50 minutes for the meeting.
Ooh, nice.
And I feel like actually what's happening is these developers are realizing that people are going a little nuts and that the tools that they've created so that we can very easily pack our schedules and do, you know, shove much more into every day, that actually that's not doing anybody any favors. So they're... Do you consult with any of these companies, by the way?
Well, what I find hilarious about the electronic calendars, I mean, you can like triple book yourself for a time slot, which is really funny.
Yeah,
if
it doesn't
you think
really
about
stop
it.
You.
It doesn't stop you at all. It doesn't remind you, by the way, these two things are 30 minutes apart from each other, and yet you have scheduled yourself back to back into them. Curious that. Yeah. You know, they need a little, I don't know, say what those little paperclip like come up and tell you, this is a bad idea. But, you know, yeah, no, I mean, we all need to be more judicious with what we agree to take on. And one of the things I often suggest to people is whenever you're asked to do something in the future, ask yourself if you'd do it tomorrow. Because it's really hard to have that same sense of opportunity cost and how much energy you'll have and what you'll want to take on and how busy you'll be for a time in the future. I mean, if somebody asked me to do something in October, well, I look at my October calendar and it looks pretty open. So, yeah, I'm free. Sure, I've got nothing going on in October. Happy to take that on.
That is not how it's going to feel in October.
That's totally not how it's going to be in October. You know, I'm going to be just as busy as I am now, only I'll have this other thing that I really didn't want to do that's also going to be on my calendar now. I'll be even busier. So better to ask if you'd do it tomorrow.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk more about how to make our calendars more productive.
Check the backseat. Check the backseat.
All right, come here.
Check the backseat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the backseat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
It's the Breakfast Club, the world's most dangerous morning show.
Hey!
Angela Yee is kind of like the big sister that always pokes you in the forehead.
That's not how it goes?
That's not how anything goes.
Yemi's really like a robot. One of the best DJs ever.
Believe that!
Charlamagne is the wild card.
And I'm about to give somebody the credit they deserve for being stupid.
I know, that's right.
What is wrong with you?
Listen to the Breakfast Club weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on 106.7 The Beat. Columbus's real hip-hop and R&B.
We are chatting with Laura Vanderkamp, and we're trying to figure out time management here. And you've got two podcasts. One of them is called Best of Both Worlds, which is because you're a mom, too. You're not just the time guru.
A mom of many. Four children, yes.
We're all juggling women here. How do you figure out, because being a mom can be a full-time job, and jobs certainly can suck up all your time. Is it possible to have it all? I mean, do you schedule every minute? Is that the only way you could have it all? Or is that a myth and we should all just give it up right now?
I do think that people can have it all if you define having it all as having, you know, a career you really enjoy, a family you also really enjoy, and time for your personal pursuits, too. And I don't think doing all those things requires scheduling every minute of your life. I do think it requires being careful with your time and mindful and intentional about how you spend your time. But I certainly don't think those are in opposition. And in Best of Both Worlds, which I co-host with my friend Sarah Hart Unger, who is a practicing physician and mom of three small children, so a lot on her plate as well, we talk about it from this angle of people who are loving careers, loving families, wanting to do their own things as well. Because we felt there was really a gap in the market. Because as you said, a lot of the content aimed at moms is pretty negative and saying you won't be able to do these things, you know, that you're going to have to make all these harsh trade-offs. And my point is always there are 168 hours in a week, which is quite a bit of time. If you are working 40 hours a week, so that's a full-time job, and sleeping 8 hours a night, which a lot of people claim not to do, but let's say you're doing, that's 56 hours per week. That leaves 72 hours to do other things. So I suspect it's quite possible to spend a lot of quality time with your family, spend some time with friends, spend some time exercising, spend some time reading, if you're careful about how you allocate those
hours. Can you spend some time just doing boring, stupid stuff? If you want to, like watching, like binge watching Netflix, is that okay?
Certainly can. If it brings you joy, if it brings you joy into your schedule, by all means, watch whatever show you want to watch on
Netflix.
Guilt free. I think the problem arises when people don't recognize that leisure time is occurring and so spend it in sort of mindless ways. Like we just pick up our phones and sort of start scrolling through stuff, you know, looking at photos of on Facebook of people from high school you weren't that fond of in the first place. And then, you know, whole hours can disappear into this. And you know, especially when you are so busy, it can be very frustrating if you spend leisure time mindlessly like that. So I even tell people, like, think about it. What would bring you joy? And if it's choosing to watch an hour of a favorite television show, do that, right? And know you are doing it and choose to do that and enjoy it and savor it while you're
doing it.
No guilt. No guilt. Okay. Guilt is pretty useless in any case.
Yeah. So, okay, now switching into work mode, you talk about not about working only to the point of diminishing returns and that sort of rule of economics as applied to your work. How does that apply?
Well, with most things that we allocate resources to, there comes this point of diminishing returns. So, you know, if you are eating a brownie, for instance, the first 4 or 5 bites are amazing. Maybe the 10th bite is sort of less exciting, and probably the 100th bite would be no fun at all. So it's the same point of diminishing returns. And there's been some interesting studies looking at this, you know, the amount of errors people make when their hours go north of about 50 a week, for instance, that you just become less efficient as you become tired. And you can do certain things to renew your energy, but you need to sort of pay attention to the hours as a whole. The good news is, if you are smart about how you spend your work hours, you can do a lot in 40, you know, certainly in 50 hours a week. But you need to pay attention to, when do I have the most energy? What sort of work should be done at the time when I have the most energy? What sorts of work is better suited to time when I don't have as much energy? How can I make sure that I am making space not just for the things that are right in front of me, demanding to be done, the urgent stuff, but also nurturing work relationships, building up yourself as an expert in a field, for instance, and all that's involved in networking. But if you are intentional, if you think through your work week, you can make space for all of that.
There was a sentence that you wrote that actually stuck with me when I was reading your material, and it's, "Choices skillfully made lead to freedom." Can you unpack that for us?
Yeah, this was a great quote that I came across from a Buddhist teacher. But it's just pointing out that I think it was mindfulness ultimately leads to having more time. Because when we choose how to spend our hours, then we start to put the good stuff in and then see what other time is also available to relax, to have leisure time. I know that the days and the weeks when I am better about thinking through what would I really like to do this week, what time is available to me, when can those things go, what doesn't matter as much, I feel like I have so much more time. And it's been almost amazing, you know, because I am a mother of 4 small children, things go wrong all the time. I mean, this is the nature of family life. And, you know, we had some, you know, things happen in the fall with, like, you know, kids and ER visits, as always happens. Everyone's all right. But I was so amazed that one week that that happened, how productive I felt, because I had identified sort of the three things that absolutely had to happen that week. And even if I'd spent much of Monday in the ER, I still knew what three things had to get done. And so I wasn't making myself busy with all the other stuff that did not absolutely have to get done. But I did those three things. Now, I probably didn't do anything else, but those three things got done. And so, hey, you know, I'm good.
Yeah.
And mindfulness leads to this sense of freedom.
You did a great job.
Yeah.
So it sounds to me like you must be pretty good at saying no to things, because part of planning your time is planning what you're not going to do. So how do you, what's your no style?
My no style. Well, I do try to ask myself that question. Will I do it? Would I do it tomorrow? Is this something I want to take on compared to the other things I could be doing with that hour? You know, and we are, somebody just asked to have a phone call. It seems like, oh, it's just a phone call. But that's an hour that you could, you know, go walk outside on a beautiful spring day, for instance. Is that phone call adding more to your life than the walk on the beautiful spring day? While you're on that walk, you may have an awesome idea related to your business, to your career, to something else you want to do in life. Is that phone call worth more than giving yourself the chance to come up with that amazing idea? I think these are the sorts of questions we need to ask. But, you know, I don't want to just make it sound like you should just say no to everything, because I think sometimes people who've been very, very busy get in their mind like, okay, now I need to learn to say no. And that may be true. But part of learning to say no is also recognizing when something is a good opportunity and learning to say yes to the right things and saying yes wholeheartedly to things that maybe, you know, doesn't seem like the sort of thing someone like us should do or should have the space for. I see this especially when a lot of my literature has been aimed at parents of small children, for instance. I think mothers in particular often feel like, oh, well, I couldn't travel to that conference. I couldn't take on that promotion because it would involve a lot of demands. But if it's something that really excites you and would make you want to come to work and you think you could uniquely contribute to, maybe you should say yes, right? You shouldn't just listen to that story that just because I have these family responsibilities means I can't do those things. Now, if you take that on, you may need to say no to some other things. But I'm guessing there's a bunch of lower value work tasks and such that you could say no to.
What's your filter for that, though? Because I think a lot of us will take on anything anyone throws at us, you know, especially at work. You want to be the helpful person. You want to be the go-to person. And as a mom,
maybe I'm just not a helpful person.
Oh,
I don't
know.
No, I see this. I have some friends who I see that in, that they say yes to everything as soon as someone asks. I love the rubric that Gretchen Rubin has of people who are upholders, just people who are obligers. And so obligers, of course, when somebody else asks them to do something, they will automatically say yes, you know, sort of a people-pleasing kind of person. And some of us may be less oriented that way. So, you know, but I think the rubric that of going through, would I do this tomorrow? Because if I would cancel things for tomorrow, if I'd move stuff around to put this in tomorrow because I'm pretty excited about it, that's a good sign that I should say yes to it in the future.
Love that. When we come back, we're going to shift gears a little bit and talk fiction.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public, the list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
We've been chatting with Laura Vanderkam about time management. And what is shocking to me is how well you've managed your time so that you not only host two podcasts, but you have written books on time management. And your latest book, Juliet School of Possibilities, is a story. It's like, it's not even like a self-help book. It's really a story. How did that happen?
Well, there's some history of there being business fables. Many of the best-selling business books of all time have been things like Five Dysfunctions of a Team or The One-Minute Manager, which are attempting to teach a lesson, but in the form of a story. And I know that people love stories. I give a lot of speeches, and nobody ever comes up to me afterwards and says, yeah, that statistic. I love that statistic. That moved me, right? You know, it's always this story. Oh, the story you told about this. And people can cite these stories back to you almost perfectly. It's amazing how good our memory is for stories. So I thought, well, I've been writing a lot of time management literature. Maybe I should try a different tactic. And the publisher I'd been working with over the years is also interested in doing fables. So we came up with the idea of Juliet's School of Possibilities, which is a fable about an ambitious young woman whose life is falling apart on various dimensions because she cannot figure out how to spend her time well. She winds up at Juliet's School of Possibilities, where her mentor, Juliet, shows her what it truly means to, you know, make good choices.
Are you Juliet?
I am not Juliet. I so wish I were Juliet. But I've interviewed so many amazing people over the years, and the lessons I have learned from them sort of could be put together to create this figure of Juliet, who is a successful businesswoman, loving mother, and very calm. I think that's the part that really gets me, because I may sometimes feel like, oh yeah, I'm doing good on making the business stuff work, the family stuff work, but I'm a little bit tense. She's different.
So what's the School of Possibilities? What's the most important lesson you could draw from there?
Well, at the School of Possibilities, Riley is shown different versions of her life, which is based on different choices she might make about how she spends her time, whether she just reacts to whatever is right in front of her, whatever seems most urgent, whatever is blinking, versus, you know, if she puts thought into it and makes sure she makes time in her busy schedule for the things that align with her long-term goals. And these two visions are entirely different. And it's not even that the sort of false choice that a lot of people have, oh, I'll either be professionally successful or I'll be personally successful. These two things are at odds. It's really one vision she's not professionally or personally successful, and the other she's both, because it's the same mindset that I am choosing what is most important to put my time in and recognizing that I cannot do everything. So I have to make choices of which things are most important. And so when she learns to do that, she starts rapidly making changes in her life, trying to put the pieces of her life back together. And I guess readers will have to find out if she succeeds.
So I loved the story, and it felt a little bit like Dickens, A Christmas Carol, because you have the future visions. But what I found sort of ironic was that this is a woman who has, I think by the time of the book is over, 1,000 emails in her inbox. And the first choice she makes after her epiphany is to go for a bike ride, which was wild. Because sometimes I think that is where we need to go, right? Just the opposite of whatever it is we're doing.
Yeah, because it turns out those 1,000 emails will still be there after the bike ride. And they'll be there whether you go for the bike ride or not, but your ability to deal with what you need to deal with coming out of those 1,000 emails may be better if you go on the bike ride. And also, I mean, getting through those 1,000 emails wasn't going to help her save her career. I mean, her career was already falling apart. She needed something new to pull herself out of this hole, her company giving her an ultimatum that she was soon going to be out. So, you know, if the same thing you've been doing isn't working, you probably should try something different.
So let me ask you, sometimes I think to make changes in the way you use your time, you're really talking about making a profound change in yourself. I mean, you know, for example, one of the people I admire most in this world is a fantastic professional, killing it on so many levels. Her house is a complete disaster area. And I feel that every time I go over to her house, I think, no wonder she is so incredible. And if I could just let go of the stupid counter wiping situation that I have in my head, maybe I too would have, you know, would be on the freeway a little bit more the way she is. But I'm a counter wiper. My mother made me into a counter wiper. I do it especially when I'm angry. So how do I get, I want to get over this. I don't want to be a passive aggressive cleaning person. I want to free up that time and let things be a little bit more of a zoo at my house. But this is profound. How do I dig this out of me?
Yeah, we have all sorts of stories that we tell ourselves that are often based on the way we grew up. And anytime you're telling a story that starts with, well, everybody knows that, you know, you can't just go to bed with dirty counters. Well, yes, you can. It turns out you can go to bed with dirty counters, and people do it all the time. I mean, nobody wants to eat off truly filthy counters, but I'm guessing those counters will get dirty again
encrusted.
The next day.
Perhaps that's where we draw the line.
That's maybe where we draw the line, but the counters will, in fact, get dirty again the next day, whereas you won't get that time back. Or, you know, we have the story of, I always joke about this, the 11 p.m. home inspection. There's a lot of people who have somehow absorbed this story that there is an 11 p.m. home inspection, and if the house is not picked up, they can't go to bed because there will be an 11 p.m. home inspection.
On before breakfast, because I love how short, sweet, and to the point before breakfast is. You're very careful with your listeners' time, of course. And that one belongs on there.
I'm going to
need
the
reminder.
Okay.
Like, there is no
home
inspection.
There is no 11 p.m. home inspection.
Right.
Yeah. And, I mean, I know it's hard to change these stories. I mean, we can, if the counter wiping is about working off stress, maybe there's some other thing that would be more productive to do with that stress, like going for a run or, you know, punching a punching bag or something along those lines, writing in a journal. These all might be things that would help.
I think
I'm
going to have a giant punching bag installed in my kitchen. I could just hang it from the ceiling next to the sink.
Or just stop stressing about having clean counters and,
yes.
and enjoy your clean counters
right.
and listen to a podcast while you're wiping
while
down.
While I'm
your,
wiping.
Yes,
maybe
then you're multitasking. Is multitasking good or bad?
It depends how you're multitasking. I think the most common form of multitasking is the one that really gets us in trouble, which is you're attempting to do two things at once that are using related parts of your brain. So you're on a conference call and you're trying to check email at the same time. You are probably not really paying attention to both of them. And I know this. It's so tempting to do because, you know, you're on a call for an hour and possibly you're not needed for the whole hour. And like, oh, I'll just check my email, see what's coming in. And inevitably, when I do that, people are like, and Laura, what did you think of that?
Yeah.
like,
It's actually so common now that people don't even really apologize. They say, oh, I checked out for a second. What was the question? I mean, I have this happens.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. This happens.
Okay, maybe
I
haven't quite gotten myself
time.
To that level.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to say. I've actually been doing a lot of video chats lately to get around that issue. It sort of forces everyone to pay more attention. And I feel bad about it somewhat as a, you know, work from home mom because I often don't wish to do my hair and makeup before being on a video call. But on the other hand, you pay so much more attention. And it also forces the issue a little bit more, which is that if you can be checking email during it, maybe you don't need to be on the call. Or maybe you don't need to be on the call for the whole time. I mean, you could be on for 10 minutes and then, you
and
know,
you can
be
more honest about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I see the rest of this agenda doesn't have anything to do with me. I think probably you guys could just continue this without me or, you know, or release other people if you're in the position, the sort of managerial position of the call and say, well, for the first 15 minutes, we need everyone. And then after that, we only need these two people. I mean, that's entire. If people did that, it would free up all sorts of space.
Are you a fan of finding like 5 minutes here and 5 minutes there? Do you have to have big chunks of time to make a difference in your schedule? Or can it be like the 15 minutes you grabbed because the traffic was moving?
I think you can definitely use small bits of time. I'm a little bit wary of these sort of time hacks I read about online all the time that promise to save you little bits of time here and there. Because, I mean, if you take 30 seconds less in the shower, I'm not really sure what you're going to do with that. This doesn't seem like this is going to change your life in any measurable way. But that said, you don't need huge chunks of time in order to do things. And some of the biggest changes more practical changes I've made in my life have come out of recognizing that you can use small bits of time. So for instance, putting the Kindle app on my phone so I can read ebooks in short chunks of time that I might have been tempted just to be deleting emails or scrolling around online. Now I can actually read books. And it's somewhat amazing how much literature you can get through in those small chunks of time.
Laura, thank you so much for being with us today. Great advice.
Thank you for having me.
If you want to hear more from Laura, check out her podcast Before Breakfast or go to her website, lauravanderkam.com.
My thanks as well, and thanks to Alicia Haywood, our fantastic producer, and thanks to all of you listening. Please, will you do us a favor? Rate and review us if you have not done so already. We'd love to know how you're feeling about this podcast, and connect with us here at U-Turns Podcast.
Check the back seat. Check the back seat.
All right, come here.
Check the back seat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the backseat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.